Lhasa, the People's Republic of Tibet. The world's most populous city is still recovering from the results of last week's general election. The Social Democrats have smashed the Lamas Party in a landslide victory, and the streets are still roaring with revelers. I meet Nuri Televaldi at a crowded sidewalk cafe. At times, we have to shout over the euphoric din.
Before the outbreak started, overland smuggling was never popular. To arrange for the passports, the fake tour buses, the contacts and protection on the other side all took a lot of money. Back then, the only two lucrative routes were into Thailand or Myanmar. Where I used to live in Kashi, the only option was into the ex-Soviet republics. No one wanted to go there. And that is why I wasn't initially a Shatu. I was an importer. Raw opium, uncut diamonds, girls, boys, whatever was valuable from those primitive excuses for countries. The outbreak changed all that. Suddenly we were besieged with offers, and not just from the Liudong Rinku, but also, as you say, from people on the up and up. I had urban professionals, private farmers, even low-level government officials. These were people who had a lot to lose. They didn't care where they were going. They just needed to get out.
Did you know what they were fleeing?
We'd heard the rumors. We'd even had an outbreak somewhere in Kashi. The government had hushed it up pretty quickly, but we guessed, we knew something was wrong. But Kashi was a boomtown. I think 90%, maybe more, of all westbound overland traffic came through with even a little left over for air travel.
Air travel?
Just a little. I only dabbled in transporting Renshi by air. A few cargo flights now and then to Kazakhstan or Russia. Small-time jobs. It wasn't like the East, where Guangdong or Jiangsu were getting thousands of people out every week.
You say they didn't call for a doctor, that they were afraid they'd be sent back. But then why try to find a cure in the West?
You don't really understand a refugee's heart, do you? These people were desperate. They were trapped between the infections and being rounded up and treated by their own government. If you had a loved one, a family member, a child who was infected, and you thought there was a shred of hope in some other country, wouldn't you do everything in your power to get there? Wouldn't you want to believe there was hope?
Did you see many infected?
Not in the beginning. The blight worked too fast. It wasn't like air travel. It might take weeks to reach Kashi, and even the slowest of burns, I've been told, couldn't last longer than a few days. Infected clients usually reanimated somewhere on the road, where they would be recognized and collected by the local police. Later, as the infestations multiplied and the police became overwhelmed, I began to see a lot of infected on my route.
Were they dangerous?
Rarely. Their family usually had them bound and gagged. You'd see something moving in the back of a car, squirming softly under clothing or heavy blankets. You'd hear banging from a car's boot or later from crates with air holes in the back of vans. Air holes. They really didn't know what was happening to their loved ones.
Did you?
By then, yes. But I knew trying to explain it to them would be a hopeless cause. I just took their money and sent them on their way. I was lucky. I never had to deal with the problems of sea smuggling.
That was more difficult.
And dangerous. My associates from the coastal provinces were the ones who had to contend with the possibility of an infected breaking its bonds and contaminating the entire hold.
What did they do?
I've heard of various solutions. Sometimes ships would pull up to a stretch of deserted coast. It didn't matter if it was the intended country. It could have been any coast. And unload the infected Renshi onto the beach. I've heard of some captains making for an empty stretch of open sea and just tossing the whole writhing lot overboard. That might explain the early cases of swimmers and divers starting to disappear without a trace, or why you'd hear of people all around the world saying they saw them walking out of the surf. At least I never had to deal with that. I did have one similar incident, the one that convinced me it was time to quit. There was this truck, a beat-up old jalopy. You could hear the moans from the trailer. A lot of fists were slamming against the aluminum. It was actually swaying back and forth. In the cab, there was a very wealthy investment banker from Xi'an. He'd made a lot of money buying up American credit card debt. He had enough to pay for his entire extended family. The man's Armani suit was rumpled and torn. There were scratch marks down the side of his face, and his eyes had that frantic fire I was starting to see more of every day. The driver's eyes had a different look, the same one as me. The look that maybe money wasn't going to be much good for much longer. I slipped the man an extra 50 and wished him luck. That was all I could do.
Where was the truck headed?
Kyrgyzstan.